Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we're going to talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robbie, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. Today we're going to talk about Klitschko and Fury, the big fight, back on. Our train wreck of the week this week involves none other than Adrian Bronner. And what would a train wreck of the week be without Adrian Bronner, you know?
I think we should name the award after him.
The Adrian Bronner Train Wreck of the Week Award. That's right.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do from here on out. We're Adrian Bronner Train Wreck of the Week. Whether it's about him or not, he's renamed the award.
Because he's always on it. He always finds a way to be on it.
Always. Yeah. Our history lesson today, Robbie, we're going deep. October 2, 1980, and I know you're excited about this one. Larry Holmes, the Eastern Assassin, versus Muhammad Ali for the heavyweight championship of the world. I can't believe that was all the way back in 1980, man. I remember watching that fight.
No, I view it as a sad occasion, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Very sad. Yeah, very sad. Our fantasy fight this week pits Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez versus Ricardo Finito Lopez. But first, we get started with the Adrian Bronner Experience. That's right. So I was at the fights this weekend and caught every fight out there, man. It was a good show they put on, man. Everybody fought really well. A lot of Ohio talent on there. All the Ohio guys did really well, except for one who was knocked out. But hey, you can't win them all.
Yeah, well, I got to see most of them, especially the bigger names, because Show Extreme showed the Jamal Herring and Robert Easter fights, and then of course Showtime showed the Adrian Bronner fight. So.
Right. So let's start it from the top, man. Let's talk about Bronner, the marquee fight, you know, of the weekend. As I said last week, Robbie disagreed with me, but yep. The marquee fight, Adrian Bronner versus Khabib Alekhverdiev.
5,932 people agreed with you, Eric.
That's right. That's right. Well, we'll talk about that too. It's 500 tickets were actually given away. You know, speculation is it was right around 1,000 tickets were given away, but you know. That is what it is. Through the first four rounds of this fight, man, it was all AB. Bronner's best punches through the first four rounds was that counter right hand. Alekhverdiev had absolutely no answer for Bronner's speed. There didn't seem to be a power advantage for Bronner, but he was just hitting him at will. I mean, and you know, eventually, you know, all those punches are going to add up.
Okay, my question to the WBA. Is how do you make these two eligible for your title belt when one obviously came off of a loss and two, it looked like the other guy, to be honest with you, I've seen him fight Jesse Vargas. Some people thought he won that fight. I thought he lost.
I thought he lost that fight too.
How can WBA make these two guys number one and number two to fight for the vacant title when I don't think either one of them deserved it? I mean, congratulations to Adrian. He's got it. But, you know, this is where boxing fans should question the sanctioning bodies when they make these vacant titles available for two fighters that, in my opinion, didn't deserve to fight for it.
Well, the way it goes, and we know this from the IBF, and they all work the same, Adrian Bronner was ranked number two in the WBA. And I'm not sure if that first slot was vacant or not, but I know he was ranked number two in the WBA. Okay?
Yep.
Number three belonged to Amir Imam. All right?
Yep.
So at that point, then they offer Bronner the spot. They say, hey, do you want to fight for the title? Yeah, sure, why not? I'll fight for
it.
Okay, now we got to find you a dance partner. So they go to number three and say, hey, Amir, do you want to fight this? Well, no, Amir Imam does not want to fight him because Amir Imam fights the winner of Postol Matisse now. He's now the mandatory.
Exactly. So, no, he's turned that down.
And that's a lot more money. That's going to be a lot more money than coming to Cincinnati to fight Bronner.
Exactly.
So then they go to the next guy, and then the next guy, and I think it was a Mauricio Herrera, I want to say, And yeah. And then was this guy right here, Khabib Alekverdiev.
He was to be honest with you, Herrera would have given Adrian a better fight.
I think so, too. Now, for reasons unknown, I don't know why he didn't accept the fight, because that's what they're supposed to do is go in order.
Well, I have a feeling that because Herrera is on the other side of the fence, because, you know, he's with Top Rank or one of those people, because he's always on HBO. I mean, the only time he's ever been on Showtime is when he fought Danny Garcia. And that was, and the reason why he fought Danny Garcia is he's a mandatory for Danny Garcia.
Right.
I have a feeling that his promotional thing got in the way. Otherwise, because, you know, I've been involved in several interviews with Mauricio Herrera, and I know he doesn't turn down a fight. So I think had it been up to him, I think he would have gladly came to Cincinnati, and it would have, I guarantee you, more tickets would have been sold, and it would have been a much more entertaining fight than what you got on Saturday night.
Yeah, what we got Saturday night was a one-sided beating, man. I know at one point in the seventh round, and you probably saw this on Showtime, there was a heckler in the audience. Not necessarily a heckler, wasn't really heckling him per se, but he was talking to Bronner saying, don't let him hit you or whatever, and then Bronner answered, he can't touch me. You know, so he really started clowning in this fight.
Well, what I didn't like about Adrian and what I never like about Adrian is he was so comfortable in the ring, he decided to carry on a dialogue with Paulie Malignaggi at ringside.
Yeah, we saw that too. He was right in front of us when he did that. That I can't stand that. I mean, just, you know, if you're going to do something, finish it up.
Yeah.
You know, finish up your business, you know. I mean, you know, it took you 12 rounds to get rid of this guy. He really could have got him out of there in eight or nine rounds. You know,
yeah.
Alekverdiev couldn't put any pressure on Bronner, and you saw it. I mean, and Bronner was hitting him with just monster shots. And I watched the replay on Showtime, or my replay anyway, on Showtime.
Right.
And it didn't even do it justice to the beating he got. When you're down there, I could hear every punch being hit. I mean, I could hear him getting hit with every shot.
Yeah.
And some of those shots, man, were just vicious. And, you know, I see Alekverdiev back him up to the ropes, back him into a corner, and just watch him look to set. You could see him getting ready to throw. By the time he does that, man, Bronner's gone.
I wish John David Jackson, Verdiev trainer, would have stepped in and just stopped this fight long before it got stopped. Because, you know, I was
shocked.
It was basically over before it even started. I mean, we're going to talk about this later, but quit giving Adrian cupcakes.
You know, I tell you, I was really shocked with John David Jackson, too, because, like I said, he's a great, great trainer. And to let this fight go on like it did, when your guy clearly did not have an answer, clearly did not have, you know, he didn't have the skill to compete there. He was getting killed, you know.
Yeah.
And he hadn't won a round. I couldn't even find, I think the Showtime, I think, gave him their ninth round. I couldn't even give him the ninth round, you know.
No, I scored this shutout for 11 rounds.
Yeah, I had a complete shutout. Up till the 11th round, like you said, starting the 11th round or 12th round.
You can't score the 12th because he knocked him out, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
You know, I had it the same way you did, man. I just could not give this guy a round. And he was trying. You could see him trying, but he was completely outmatched, you know.
Yeah. No, that's why I question the organizations, because he's a decent fighter, but he did not deserve to be in the ring. I mean, and like I said, if Mauricio Herrera would have been allowed to take this fight, he would have, and it would have been much more entertaining. Because, like I said, I've been involved in several interviews with him, and he's the kind of guy that if somebody offers him a fight, you know, as long as there's enough money involved, he'll say, where do I sign?
And I think, you know, and I really do, and I make a lot of fun of Miguel Cotto for that. And I think that, but I think when the chips are down, I don't think he's scared of anybody. And I think Herrera's much the same way. He'll fight anybody, anytime. Francisco Santana, the same way. He'll fight anybody, anytime. Doesn't matter. Backyard, no backyard, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to think that it was probably a promotional issue over anything else, or unless he had a better offer somewhere else, which is entirely possible, too.
Yeah.
You know?
But, no, I, and you know, I bet you something has worked out in the future where Mauricio will get that fight somewhere down the road, especially if Adrian keeps winning. So
yeah, and I don't necessarily think that Herrera beats Bronner, but I think it's a good fight. You know, I tell you, I think it's a really good fight. You know, he really, I tell you what, and the guy next to me, we were watching this, you know, and the guy looks at me, he says, man, he just looks locked in for this fight. And he did. He looked completely locked in for this fight. I mean, you knew that there was, it looked like to me like there was something on the line here. That's how he fought, you know.
Well, look, he had to figure out early on in the, like after the first couple rounds, he had to realize, I got nothing to worry about here. I can do whatever I want.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think that's the thing, too. I mean, and he really had nothing coming back. You know, by the, I think the second or third round, his eyes were already starting to redden. You know, Alec Verdiev's eyes were already starting to redden and kind of puff out and stuff. And he was just getting killed. I mean, even those jabs he was getting hit with were hard. Every shot looked like it hurt. Now, to his credit, he's got a chin, man. Alec Verdiev's got a chin, man. He could take some shots.
Yeah.
But I'm just shocked that they let it go on. His corner could have stopped that fight in the eighth round because he was he was completely out of the fight. He had no chance in the fight. And that's the kind of fight that takes years off his career, you know.
If I had a chance to interview John David Jackson, I'd be asking him, why did you allow it to continue? Especially when you kept telling him you were going to stop it. I mean, I hate trainers that do that. I don't know if they use it as a motivational tool or what, but when their fighter is clearly losing, they'll start talking in the middle of the fight. If you don't do something, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to stop it, and they never do. Why is that? I'd really like to get a trainer on here to find out the answer to that question, because in my opinion, if you're going to make that threat and your fighter is not following through with the instructions you give him, or he's not doing what you want to do, step in and stop the fight. That's your job.
Right. I agree. I agree 100%, man. That's the thing. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to step in there. And, I mean, your job is to protect the fighter, and that's the ref's job also, but it's your job too. And if the ref goes to the corner, I mean, the ref was bringing the doctor in and everything like that. I mean, yeah, clearly this guy was just outclassed. I mean, it was just a one-sided pounding, man. It really was. And like I said, I mean, being a ringside for it, you could hear every one of those shots, you know, every one of them, man. And when I watched it back on TV, it completely didn't do it justice.
No.
Because, I mean,
well,
it was bad.
The fight that started the Showtime portion of the card was very interesting. I did not agree with that decision at all. And that's Edgar Cherry and Jose Pedraza. I don't know how you saw it ringside, but I thought Edgar Cherry won that fight.
Yeah, I had it 115-113 for Cherry in that fight.
Exactly.
I think I gave the first seven rounds, I gave six of the first seven, or maybe five of the first seven, to Pedraza. Because I thought Pedraza just looked sharper, he looked a little crisper, but toward the second half of the fight, I don't know if he just gassed or what, but toward the second half of that fight, that tide really turned.
Yeah, for those that don't know, two of the judges scored at 117-111 for Pedraza, and one judge had a 116-112 for Cherry. And I mean, come on, Edna Cherry won that fight. I don't know if he'll get a rematch, but he's in the same division as Javier Fortuna, and Fortuna is going to have a field day with Pedraza. There's no way Pedraza is going to be able to deal with Fortuna. He's lucky to still have his title belt because I thought he lost.
I did too. I thought that, you know, well, 117-111 twice.
Yeah,
that just blew us away, man. I mean, everybody in press row had the fight for Cherry. We all had the fight for Cherry. I know the Showtime guy had the fight for Cherry.
Yep.
That was just shocking when it came out. And the worst part is U.S. Bank. The audio there was horrible. You couldn't hear a thing. I couldn't hear the scores, and we were right underneath the speakers. We couldn't hear, everything was muffled, you know. So when we finally got the scores, it was like, are you serious, you know?
That arena probably got to be updated with a new sound system or something, because it used to be the Riverfront Coliseum, and it probably needs to be upgraded to some degree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know. So, but yeah, I thought Cherry got robbed in that fight. That was pretty unfortunate. All right, so let's talk about the undercard for a little bit here. We got 10 rounds, lightweights, Jamel Herring, decision, 10-round decision over Yakubu Amidou. You know, Jamel Herring, to me, was the aggressor for the first two rounds. You know, Amidou just kind of looked confused in there. I mean, it was pretty clear, at least in the early goings, that, you know, Herring was just kind of outclassing him. And I had a feeling that that was kind of going to be the case here, and certainly it was. I couldn't really find a round to give Amidou. He was very game, but Herring, you know, was just working off a stiff jab, just dictating the pace in this fight. Largely target practice to me. I mean, I knew Amidou was going to be tough and durable, but, you know, he didn't really come up with much else, though, on you know.
No, definitely 190 of us. I mean, I can't believe one judge actually scored it 99-91. It should have been 190 on all three cards.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. It was just a one sided. I mean, Herring looked good. I'd like to see you know, maybe it's time to step up his competition, or you know, but I'd like to see him again against, you know, but this guy, I mean, look, man. I mean, he went the distance in a dominating fashion against a very, very tough fighter, you know, and a
now,
very durable
division,
fighter.
What division is he in?
Lightweight.
140?
Yeah. Or 135.
Or 135. Oh, okay. How about a guy like Miguel Vasquez? Let's see what he could do against somebody like that.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think that would be a good fight. I think that'd be a very good fight.
And the reason why I mentioned Vasquez is he's fighting on the Toe to Toe Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there you go.
There it is.
No, he did what he was supposed to do. The one I was very impressed with, and man, as long as he stays in this weight class, he's going to thoroughly dominate everybody, and that's Robert Easter Jr. And, you know, for marketing purposes, I would call him Robert Easter Bunny Jr.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, he had a big following. He had a big following at the conference, at the press conference also.
Yeah.
Everywhere I looked, everybody had the Easter jackets on and everything. This guy, man, he started out really fast. I thought Easter really had to settle down after the first round. I thought that he clearly won the round, clearly was the aggressor, but I thought he may have been able to connect and get him out of there earlier, you know, aside from the third round, of course, but I thought he would get him out of there earlier, but it looked to me like he was a little bit over-anxious, kind of loading up a lot on his punches, and then, but it seemed like when he settled down in the second round, it was all his going. I mean, the fight was clearly all his way.
Well, you know, the problem that other fighters in his weight class are going to have is Robert Easter is 5'11", 6 foot tall, and as long as he stays at 135, he's going to thoroughly dominate anybody. I can't see anybody being able to get inside that reach or being able to deal with his size. He's basically too tall for that division. If he could ever put some weight on, he could cause some people in other weight classes some serious issues.
Yeah, he looked very impressive, and that was the one thing you noticed right off the bat was the size difference. And I would have loved to see if Easter got on the scale that night and to see what he weighed, because he weighed obviously 135, you know, at the weigh-ins, and I would love to see what he weighed that night because he looked huge.
Yeah,
he just towered over Solis, man, and Solis was just completely outclassed, you know, outgunned, outclassed.
He's almost too big for that division, you know. I don't know why he's so small weight wise, but man, I would increase his diet and have him move up to maybe 147, because if he continues to stay at 135 or even 140, I think he dominates both divisions.
I think so too, man. I think he's the real deal.
He's definitely
the real deal.
I mean, he's somebody that in the future, for example, could give Errol Spence a fight, don't you think?
I think so, absolutely. I mean, this guy, you know, Easter, he's had a ton of amateur fights, you know, and he seems better suited for the pros.
And, you know, instead of getting behind a guy like Adrian Broner, Cincinnati should get behind this guy.
Yeah, well, he's a Toledo guy. I would definitely get behind. I mean, I'm definitely behind him, man, Robert Easter. Love him.
Because he's going to represent, because he's going to represent Ohio a lot better than the problem is.
Right, right, exactly. And then now the dark match that you didn't see was six rounds welterweights. Jamonte Clark from Cincinnati, he fought Joe Wilson. And, man, I tell you what, this kid looked impressive, very impressive. And I think he's only got six fights or six wins, 6-0 or something like that. But Jamonte Clark wins via second-round TKO. This fight was all Clark from the opening bell, man. Clark was able to drop Wilson in round one, never let up the pressure. And in 28 seconds into the second round, I mean, I tell you what, between him and Robert Easter, those guys looked the most impressive on the card tonight. I mean, obviously, Bronner looked impressive, but short of that fight, I mean, those two, Easter and Jamonte Clark especially, he looked really, really good. And then, of course, Robert Easter, who's making his way up the ladder with a 10-round fight and everything like that, I mean, he looked impressive as well.
Yeah, well, that's why I suggest a guy like Miguel Vasquez for Robert, because Robert is also going to need some rounds.
Yeah,
his fights, I mean, no fault of his own, but his fights end way too early. He's gonna need somebody who's gonna give him some rounds.
Yeah.
And a guy like Miguel Vasquez would do that.
Yeah, and I tell you, you know, the thing is, through the whole card, for the whole card, Ohio had a very impressive showing. They had, we had Toledo, we had Cincinnati on there. And I think it's about time that we started getting really good pros, because I really do believe, and I know people will debate me about this, but I really do believe that we have one of the best amateur programs in the country. As far as people coming out of our program and everything like that, we're always competitive. We have a lot of good amateur talent here. We got a lot of good trainers here. It's a very good boxing place, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm glad to see, you know, people like Robert Easter. I'm glad to see Jamonte Clark. Jamel Herring, who's kind of relocated to Cincinnati, and they all had very impressive performances. So,
mm-hmm.
Very good.
No, good night for the Queen City.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now let's switch gears and let's go to HBO for Robbie's marquee fight of the weekend. That was Victor Postol versus Lucas Matisse. And I tell you what, this was a lot like the Robert Easter fight, in the sense that the first thing I noticed was the height difference, man. Postol was 5'11".
Oh, yeah.
And Matisse is only 5'6", man.
They listed him at 5'8", but I question that.
Yeah. As expected, man, Postol established the big jab early and often. Postol attacked the body and used the jab round after round. Matisse landed a few hard right hands that rocked Postol, you know, during the mid-rounds, but, man, he never really got off the mark, man. I mean, like I said, I thought Postol was too good of a boxer, and I thought Matisse was more of a slugger. And there's not much, you know, when you put those two together, man, I thought that Postol with that jab was going to control the action, and that's kind of what he did. Matisse actually landed several punches behind Postol's head, and Postol did quite a bit of holding, but referee Jack Reese was stern with his warning, especially in the sixth round when they eased up on the dirty tactics for fear of losing points. Everything kind of heated up, man. Jack Reese, Postol said, Jack Reese told me to stop holding, and I was afraid he was going to dock a point from me, and I know Reese would have, you know.
Yeah, no, Jack did a good job in this fight. I know you don't like Jack, but Jack did a very good job in this fight. I have no complaints.
Yeah, he did pretty good, man. In the 10th round, out of nowhere, Postol nailed Matisse on the left eye with a clear right hand, and he went down, man. Matisse got to one knee, but with his head down and he was dabbing at his eye, Reese counted him out at 2 minutes and 58 seconds.
Well, it came out after the fight that Postol broke Matisse's orbital bone. So
yeah.
He
said, I felt a pop in my eye, Matisse said through a translator. He said, I prefer to take care of my eye. I could have gotten up, but I prefer to stay down and protect my eye. Nothing happened for me tonight. At the time of the knockout, Postol led 86-85. On two scorecards.
On two cards.
And Matisse surprisingly led on the other card, man.
Yeah.
I don't know what fight they were watching.
No, I have no idea. But Victor clearly won this thing, and now his mandatory is Amir Iman, and that's going to be a good fight.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I hope politics don't get in the way. I know HBO is plugging the hell out of Postal and Crawford. But I hope politics don't get in the way, because Emir Amon has won two good fights this year. He's earned that title shot. Let him have it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had Matisse also said he's not the best. He said he had his night, and I just didn't have my night. You know, but he's
right.
A world champion, and I want to congratulate him.
That's right.
He got clearly dominated in that fight, man. Postol brought up Terence Crawford after the fight. He said, "It will be my pleasure to meet him in the ring." Postol said of Crawford, "I want to prove myself to the American fans and prove they are real champions in the Ukraine."
Well, that's because Max Kellerman kept bringing up Terence Crawford. Like I said, Amir Amon is now the mandatory. He deserves
right.
that title shot.
Yeah, Amir Amon is a really good fighter, and he's paid it. He's paid his dues, and he's, you know, absolutely, he should get the next shot for sure.
That's right.
Now, on the undercard of that, Antonio Orozco versus Humberto Soto. All three judges had it for Orozco, 98-91, 97-92, and 97-92.
Yep.
It was just an okay fight for me. It wasn't even that great.
I can't argue with it. I can't argue with this. I mean, it was what it was. And what I didn't know, I learned before the fight, Sosa had been in four different training camps this year. Three of his fights got canceled, either because fighter didn't make weight, a fighter failed a drug test. You know, they ran through all the reasons why the poor guy hadn't had a fight, and it showed that, you know, he'd been in way too many training camps.
Right.
The right guy won here. It's time for him to move on, and let's see who he fights next.
I agree. Well, let's move on to the toe-to-toe Tuesday.
Okay.
Javier Fortuna versus Carlos Velasquez. Fortuna, you know, from the opening bell just came forward, and he used his pressure to create opportunities, land punches. In the second round, Fortuna landed a pair of left hooks that sent Velasquez to the canvas. In that round, Velasquez started bleeding from his nose due to a headbutt and actually may have broken his nose.
Yep.
Also in the second round, Fortuna injured his left hand and was unable to throw it for much of the rest of the fight. He still was way too much for him, outlanding him 168-51.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just crazy. He came out strong again in the 10th round, landing a series of unanswered shots that prompted referee Russell Mora to stop the fight 35 seconds into the round. At the time of the stoppage, the judges' scores were 88-82, 87-83, and 86-84, all for Fortuna. He was clearly in command. Good win for Fortuna. I look forward to seeing him again. I thought he looked pretty good.
I want to see Fortuna fight Pedraza, because I think Pedraza's title is there for the taking.
I think so, too. He did not look good in that fight, man. He did not look good in that Edner Cherry fight.
Yeah.
And I knew Cherry, I thought that he was going to have trouble with Cherry. I didn't think he was going to have that much trouble with Cherry, you know. And Cherry's a good fighter, you know. But, I didn't think he would have that much trouble.
No. And that fight's easily made because they're both on the Heyman side of things.
Right. And also, too, on that undercard, super welterweight Dominic Dalton, who is 17-0, and Oscar Molina fought to a majority of draw. So, 95-95, and let's see here.
I think it was 295-95, and one had it, what,
97-93?
97-93,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it was what it was. So.
Yep.
Then that was pretty much it for the weekend's action. Randall Bailey, I know, fought. He won. Yeah, Randall Bailey. I said that. Yeah, Randall Bailey. How about that?
Yeah.
He fought and won.
Another guy over 40 that shouldn't be fighting, but okay.
Yeah, right. You know, he was just, I mean, he was good back in the, I mean, he wasn't like a killer back in the day. He was a contender, you know. And
yeah.
I know he had a title and everything, but he was, you know, he wouldn't have competed against the elite, you know what
no.
I mean?
No.
Even back in the day, so why he's still fighting, I don't know.
I don't know.
All right. Now, tomorrow, on Tuesday, from San Antonio, the Toe-to-Toe Tuesday, and we'll go over this next week, the results. Julius Jackson versus Jose Uzcategui.
And this is a... excuse me. This is an eliminator. If Jackson wins this, he becomes the mandatory for the one and only James DeGale.
Yeah. That, hey, you know, if you can't get up for that fight, you're not going to get up at all.
That's right.
I would like to see Jackson go ahead and win this one, man. I like him, and I like to see what he's got.
No, the Hawk there's got two good sons fighting. So
yeah,
hey, you know, good one's at 160, one's at 168. Good deal. I think Jackson and James DeGale. I think that'll be an entertaining fight. Of course, James has got a fight coming up in November that he has to win, and he probably should. So,
yeah.
But no, if Jackson wins this, he becomes the mandatory for the IBF title, which DeGale holds.
Yeah. And then Saturday, October 10th, from Lowell, Massachusetts, on NBC Sportsnet, Danny O'Connor faces Gabriel Brasero. 10 rounds welterweights, and then Jonathan Guzman versus Danny Aquino, 10 rounds junior lightweights.
And O'Connor and Bezerro apparently fought once before, so this is a rematch.
Very good. Yeah, that should be a good fight, man. I'm anxious to see Danny O'Connor again. I mean, he's a decent fighter. It's a shame he didn't get that big payday with Paulie, but whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Hopefully, I don't know. Mediocre enough, he might get that rematch. He might get that fight with Paulie, you know.
Well, who knows? I was glad that we finally got to see Danny O'Connor because,
yeah,
we really didn't know who he was. So
yeah, he's a good fighter,
fighter. Okay, all right.
And then at Manchester, England, Terry Flanagan versus Diego Magdaleno, 12 rounds for Flanagan's WBO lightweight title. And then Liam Smith versus your boy, John Thompson, 12 rounds, Boxino John Thompson. For the vacant WBO junior middleweight title.
Good for John. He was the substitute in the Boxino tournament. He wasn't even supposed to be in it, and one of the guys failed to make weight. He took his place and ended up winning the whole thing.
Surprised me, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then also, from Boxino lore, Peter Petroff versus Liam Walsh, also on that card. 12 rounds of the WBO lightweight eliminator.
Okay.
So, yeah, so good to see them guys coming out. I hope they continue that boxing. I really do.
Yeah, somebody's got to start that. I mean, come on. That's an awesome idea.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. So, a good weekend of fights. We only have a couple here in the U.S., but for those UK lovers, you got a good card over there, so get your streams ready and, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So some decent fights this weekend. Nothing real major, but some good fights.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our history lesson here.
Okay.
The one Robbie is dreading, man. October 2nd, 1980. Larry Holmes versus Muhammad Ali.
Well, hey, this is the guy that got me into boxing, so this makes me sad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody, you know, you always have that fight, man. When you saw Chavez get beat by Costrazu, you know, and he was way past his prime, and then you got, you know, or Chavez with Oscar De La Hoya, or...
What's even sadder about this is after Larry Holmes beat Ali, they thought it was a good idea to put him out there one more time against Trevor Burbrick, and that was even worse.
I can't even believe it. It was like a year later, too.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, man, when this fight was actually announced, it was actually heavily anticipated, man. Ali had not fought in about 2 years. In that time, Larry Holmes had pretty much established himself as the baddest man on the planet. He was running through everyone, man, back then.
And Larry, to be honest with you, did not want this fight.
No.
Because, I don't know, well, you know, but for those that are listening, in case you don't know, Larry Holmes used to be Muhammad Ali's main sparring partner when Ali was heavyweight champion. So they were very close. They were friends. He didn't want this fight. He tried to think of every way possible to get out of it. But unfortunately, the sanctioning bodies made Ali mandatory, and it was either fight Muhammad Ali or Holmes had to vacate the title, and he didn't want to do that. But throughout this fight, you know, Holmes was dominating from start to finish, and there were several times in the fight he kept asking the referee, are you going to stop this?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, most people, logically they knew Ali was way past his prime. He hadn't fought in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then to come back against Larry Holmes, you know. But with a fighter like Ali, man, there was always that what if. You know, he had defied the odds so many times. I mean, you knew logically that it wasn't going to happen. I mean, when you just used your brain, it said, look, there's no chance this is going to happen. But, you know, he had pulled off big wins before, man. Could this be different? I mean, he, you know, George Foreman, everybody. I mean, he had pulled off a lot of big wins through his career, man. This, you know, Joe Frazier, George Foreman, Ken Norton. This, could this be different? You know, you didn't know. And that was kind of intriguing.
But, Eric, I've never openly see a fighter ask the referee several times in the fight, are you going to stop this?
Yeah.
You know.
It was bad. I mean, it was a one-sided fight, man. But, you know, Ali, I tell you, he showed up in great shape at the weigh-in. He weighed 217.
Yep.
He was actually, he was down from 254.
Yep.
So dropped down to 217. Holmes weighed in at 211, looked amazing. He looked, Holmes has always looked like a boxer. He's never been, like, shredded, you know.
No.
He's never looked like Holyfield, but he always looked like a boxer. You know, he's got that classic boxer's build, man. 15 rounds in Las Vegas. You know, when the bell rang, man, and everything got started, you could tell right off the bat, Holmes came out firing, man. He started off very fast, charging forward, throwing a ton of punches. Ali was kind of forced into defensive mode and really didn't throw much during the first round. And, you know, that Holmes really kind of established a jab. He really, and what impressed me most about Holmes is he went right to that body. He knew that was going to be the key, is going right to that body.
Well, look, when you spar with somebody for multiple fights, to get them ready for multiple fights, you learn what their weaknesses are in the gym.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he used his sparring session knowledge to, okay, if I got to fight you, then here's what I'm going to do,
right.
You know.
Second round was kind of more of the same. As the rounds went on, it was apparent that there was no miracle in store for Ali.
No.
Holmes completely dominated this fight with a jab, and he really laid into Ali's body. I remember watching this fight and wondering, man, is he going to do anything? I mean, because it was just, he was getting pummeled against the ropes. That was pretty much it. His legs were gone. His arms were gone. I mean, even if Ali were to come back and land something, you knew Holmes wasn't going to move.
I think for the only time in my lifetime, I actually wanted to cry. Because, I couldn't handle seeing what was happening. Like I said, it's the first time in my lifetime of ever watching boxing where the fighter who's actually dominating the fight is asking the referee, are you going to stop this?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, man, is, what is it, Angelo Dundee, they didn't really have stats back then, but... You know, Ali, I mean, if he landed 50 punches, it would have been a good night for him. You know what I mean? I don't even think he threw 50 punches in that fight.
No.
He was purely in defensive mode from the opening bell. Each round was like the one before it. I mean, it was just a one-sided fight, man. The fight was ultimately stopped by Angelo Dundee at the end of the 10th round. Ironically enough, after the beating he got for the first after the first 10 rounds, because he stopped it in between the 10th and 11th, after the beating that he got, Bundini Brown, who's in the corner, was arguing with Dundee about stopping the fight. What a great friend he was, huh?
Jerk, man. And what really irritated me, I mean, that should have been Muhammad Ali's last fight. It was obvious he didn't belong in the ring. And what do? They send him to the Bahamas like a year later.
To fight
and they
Trevor
have him
Burbank,
fight
yeah.
Trevor Burbank. You know,
yeah, it was
14
months later. You know, as if the layoff of 2 years wasn't long enough, you know.
Yeah.
He comes back to fight Trevor Burbank and just got completely demolished in that fight. I remember watching that one, too.
I think whoever was involved with Muhammad Ali back then, those two fights were basically money grabbed because they cared about the money. They didn't care about the human being. And that is one of the reasons why he's in the condition he's in today.
Yeah, he took a beating against Holmes. I mean, he took a real beating in that fight, man. Holmes actually after the interview, after the fight, gave an interview to Howard Cosell. Howard Cosell went back to his dressing room, and Holmes was visibly upset. He was crying, and he said that, you know, Ali was his idol, and it was a very hard thing for him to give up that kind of beating to him. He said he was really upset after that fight.
Yeah. He never wanted, you're talking about a heavyweight champion of the world who did not want to go into the ring and beat up an idol. I mean, that's basically what it was. He didn't want to do that. And so when Eric told me what the history lesson was, I'm like, oh, my God. I just, because hey, I grew up with this guy. He's the reason I got involved in boxing in the first place. And just a sad occurrence as far as I was concerned.
This was a tough fight to watch, man, especially if you were an Ali fan. I was only 7 years old at the time, and I had only heard stories about Ali. I had never really watched him fight. I had only heard stories about Ali and how great he was and everything like that and what a great fighter he is and everything. And I said, well, I can't wait to see this, you know. And I remember watching a fight. I remember watching coming him down, you know, him coming down and everything into the ring. And I remember when this fight got started, I'm like, wow, he really took a beating that round, you know. And then the second round came on and the third round and then every round. And I'm like, is he going to fight? Is he going to do it? I mean, he's just getting killed. You know,
Eric, for those of you that didn't grow up to watch him at his peak, I'm sure all of his fights are on YouTube.
We've seen quite a few. Yeah, and if you haven't seen him, you better go YouTube him, man.
He nicknamed himself the greatest, and as far as I'm concerned, he is the greatest heavyweight champion of all time. I mean, his record may not show it. I mean, you got Vladimir Klitschko breaking all kinds of heavyweight records now.
Right.
But as far as I'm concerned, in his prime, he was the greatest.
Yeah, I mean, this fight was kind of too. This was the first fight that we watched on pay-per-view. This was actually the very first pay-per-view fight I ever watched.
Yeah.
We actually had a service here called On TV.
Uh-huh.
And this is, we didn't have cable here. We didn't have satellite or cable.
Right.
So this service was called On TV. It was like a little set-top box you put on top of the TV. And
yeah.
The programming would actually start at like 8 at night. And you only had a very limited window to watch whatever you were going to watch. It went from like 8 to 3 a.m., 8 p.m. to 3 a.m.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, you know, okay. So you would watch a movie, and if you didn't like what was on, you had to watch regular TV. There was nothing. There was not multiple channels. There was one channel. That's it.
Right. Right.
You know, and then I remember them sent out like a letter and really started promoting the fight, saying, hey, it'll be on there, but it's an extra X amount of dollars.
Right.
You know, and so it was like our very first pay-per-view, you know, and I remember watching that fight. I'm like, hey, I can't, wow, what in the world? And so you're expecting, you know, as a kid, I'm hearing all these stories about Muhammad Ali, and I get there and it's like, wow, this is crazy. He's getting killed, you know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, your first exposure to the greatest wasn't the best, you know.
Right. Right. And, you know, Holmes, of course, after the fight, went on to become one of the best heavyweights in history. In my opinion, one of the most underrated heavyweights in history, you know.
Larry Holmes has never been given the credit he deserves. I mean, he successfully defended his heavyweight title not once, not twice, but 20 successful title defenses before he ran into the one and only Michael Spinks, who, remember, he told everybody before that fight, Rocky Marciano couldn't carry my jockstrap. Well, Michael Spinks took care of that, not once but twice.
Yeah, I mean, that was, but I tell you, man, in watching those, I was watching this fight leading to the show. I was watching the fight, and then it prompted me to go back and watch some of Holmes' other fights, too, man, because he was such a good fighter, man. You couldn't mess with Holmes. And he didn't have crazy power, you know what I mean? He didn't have that crazy, you know, one-punch knockout-type power like Tyson or anybody. But, man, he was a brilliant boxer, man.
And, no, he dominated most of his title defenses with that incredible jab of his because, in most cases, he had the reach on the people.
Yeah.
And he thoroughly was able to... He was kind of like the Floyd Mayweather, in a sense, of the heavyweight division, you know?
Yeah.
He basically took you in the ring and... gave you a boxing lesson for 15 rounds.
Yeah, just drowned everybody, man. Just took them into deep water, you know.
Yeah, and you know, Vladimir Klitschko is starting to become almost as underrated as Larry Holmes because, unfortunately for the U.S. people, Klitschko fights most of his fights overseas, but
yeah.
I don't blame him for doing that because you're going to go where the money is.
Right.
I mean, look at the Fury fight. They have an arena in Germany that they've sold 55,000 tickets for.
You would have never sold that much here. Never.
No.
Never.
So I don't blame the guy for keeping his fights over there.
Right. I agree.
You know?
I agree.
But no, Larry Holmes did what he was supposed to do, and by all rights, ended a legend's career. I mean, it's sad. Let's move on.
And to me, Larry Holmes was probably one of the best heavyweights in history.
Yeah.
One of the best, bar none, in history.
I can't argue with that. No.
The bad guy, boy. Yep. He was bad back in the day.
Yep.
All right. Let's move that aside. Let's go to our fantasy fight for this week, man. This is a good one, man. Ricardo Finito Lopez versus the little guys, man. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. Fight takes place at light flyweight, which means it'll be about 108. Okay. This is a tough one, man. The Mexican versus Nicaragua, I think.
Yeah, Roman is from Nicaragua.
Yeah, so, you know, with Lopez, man, Lopez was such a smooth textbook boxer, man, just so clean. Everything he threw, I mean, every shot that he threw, he was covered up. You very rarely saw him out of position. His footwork was just so amazing, you know, and he wasn't a defensive fighter. I mean, he was a good boxer, you know. That being said, man.
Well, hey, when you're 51-0, you must have been doing something right.
Yeah, 51-0 and one draw, and I think it was a technical draw. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, you couldn't lay a glove on that. This guy was so good, man. As far as chins go, man, I think that, you know, if we break it down, I think the chin, I think it's kind of a push. I mean, nobody's tested Chocolatito's chin. Nobody really tested Lopez. I think I would have to give this one a push. I think it would be.
I've only got to see Roman once, so I this is a segment I can't really comment on a whole lot, you know.
Now, as far as speed goes, they're both 108 pounds, 111 pounds. They're going to be quick.
Yeah.
You kind of got to push that one also. Now, as far as boxing ability goes, you got to give it to Ricardo. Lopez was just, I mean, he was kind of like the measuring stick that you put to other boxers.
And I think the power has to go to Roman because he's got 37 knockouts in 43 fights.
Absolutely, yeah. The power has to go to Roman, although Ricardo Lopez, let me see if I can look up his knockout rating real quick here. I can't remember. I know he's 51-0.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Let's see here. Because he knocked a fair amount of guys out, too. I don't know if he knocked out as many as, let's see,
and
38
and
knockouts. Yeah, he's 51 with 38 knockouts. He had some pop, too.
Okay.
So
that it could be almost equal then, I guess.
Yeah, I gave it to Gonzalez, but I said it could be a push, but I gave it to Gonzalez, you know. Again, man, Ricardo Lopez, just so textbook, man. If I wanted to create a perfect boxer, I would create Ricardo Lopez.
Okay.
51-0 with one draw. You know, that being said, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez is regarded as one of the top, if not the top guy now, pound-for-pound fighter in the world today.
Now, how many times have you seen Roman fight? Because I've only seen him once.
I've seen him about four or five times now.
Is he worthy of all this talk about him being the new guy to replace Mayweather?
He's very good. Yeah, he's a very good fighter, man. The thing is he's not as he's more. He reminds me more of a little Tyson than anything else because he's got that power and he could change a fight at any point. Whereas Ricardo Lopez was just a textbook boxer. And
now,
he could obviously punch, you know.
Now, I know we're going to talk about this more next week because obviously Roman is on the Triple G undercard.
Yeah.
Is Brian Viloria going to give Roman the kind of fight that everybody wants?
No.
Or is Roman going to be able to just walk in and you know, take him out?
I think that Roman is going to walk through him. I really do. I think that Gonzalez right now is just on another level. I mean, you'll be – unless he moves up in weight, I think that's when he's going to get challenged. But if he stays right there, right around 112, man, yeah.
With his size, I don't know how much more he could really move up, Eric.
Small guy, right, exactly. Yeah. Small guy, you know. And as far as him being like the top pound for pound in the sport, man, yeah, I think so. I personally have Andre Ward in that spot, and that's what we talked about a few shows ago when we did our top fives.
Right.
I had Andre Ward right there, and I had Mayweather 5, and now that Mayweather's dropped off, I think, I think that Andre Ward, but I think Chocolatito's right there, man.
Okay.
I really do.
But in order for Chocolatito to be number one or in that list, there has to be a fighter that's going to be able to challenge him to see if he's worthy. Is there anybody in 112, 115 that's going to be able to do that? Because you know more about these divisions than I do.
Yeah, the guy, like, man, his name is just, it's not in front of me, so it's slipping me. The guy who fought last week, who was it? And we were talking about that rematch.
Oh, okay. The Japanese dude?
No. The Mexican guy. I want to say Esteban. Let me see here. Let me see if I can go back.
Because I know there's a Japanese dude that everybody talks about that he's supposed to be fighting, and I don't know anything about these divisions.
Let's see here, Juan Francisco Estrada. That's him.
Okay, all right.
That guy, I think, would give him a test.
I mean, in my opinion,
it's a rematch. Yeah.
In my opinion, if you're going to be number one on that list, you've got to have a career-defining fight that you're gonna prove yourself worthy. So, and the problem is, TV networks don't give these little guys enough airtime. That's why it's shocking to me that HBO not only put him on in May, but they're now making him part of the pay-per-view. If you're going to do that, you better start putting more of these fights on so we know who these people are.
Right. And, you know, I mean, that's the other thing, too, man, is that, like, this guy is exciting. Gonzalez is a very exciting fighter. He knocks people out. He's got that power. He's got that, you know, he's got that go-to-sleep power.
Yeah.
You know.
It's obvious what HBO is going to be doing from now on. They're going to put him with Golovkin every time that Golovkin fights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good move for him because he'll get time. You know, he'll get that airtime. He'll get the recognition because this guy, I mean, you know, this guy deserves the recognition. A lot of these, you know, the fighters like this, man, the lighter weight fighters that nobody pays attention to, man, because, you know, you see a jockey come to the ring and you're like, well, what am I watching this for? You know, he should be on top of a horse. But, you know, I mean, 108 pounds, 111 pounds, these guys can fight, man. These guys are all really good fighters, man. They're all quick. Yeah. They're all good. But when you see a guy like this that has that power, that's the difference maker. You know what
okay,
I mean?
Who in your opinion wins the fantasy fight, and then what did the computer say?
All right, well, this really, I mean, is a pick 'em type of fight, man. Both guys have power, but I think where the two separate is the boxing ability of Lopez. Lopez is just that picture-perfect boxer, man, and typically great boxers have a way of stopping offense.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chocolatito would get shots in, but I think he takes shots in return. I actually see Ricardo Lopez stopping him late.
Okay.
And so I would give the fight to Lopez via TKO. The computer actually thought the same way I did. Lopez won 90% of the time, according to our computer
All
program.
Right.
And they were a mixture. There was a mixture of knockouts and a mixture of decisions, majority unanimous, decisions.
Okay.
But I think that's about right on, man. Because Lopez was just an amazing fighter, man. Another fighter like Holmes who never got a lot of respect.
Well, again, I blame that on the TV people for not putting these guys on.
Right.
I mean, the first time I can remember ever seeing little guys is when HBO started the Boxing After Dark series, and they started putting these little guys on.
Yeah,
but
those
you know,
like Kevin Kelly, Junior Jones, like 126.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But you know, and even to this day. I blame the TV people. They don't give these guys the recognition that they obviously deserve.
Right.
I mean, the only ones I can remember is Michael Carvajal, Chiquita Gonzalez.
Those were it. I mean, those were
yeah.
it. And nobody really knew. Yeah, let me tell you what. Nobody really knew Chiquita Gonzalez until he fought Carvajal. Everybody
That's
knew
right.
of his record. Everybody knew that he was good and he had a good record, but nobody had seen him. You know what
no.
I mean? Nobody had ever really watched him. I mean, unless you really followed boxing, you never watched Chiquita Gonzalez. You followed Carvajal because he was in the Olympics, but nobody ever watched Chiquita.
I mean, look, somebody should create a 24-hour boxing network so, you know, we can always watch these guys, these kind of fights.
It's kind of funny that you bring that up. Ring TV, and I mentioned this a couple shows ago, too, Ring TV has an app now. Where you can get it on Apple TV or you can get it on the whatever we got, the Roku box or whatever
Roku
it is.
And all that, yeah.
Yeah, and you could download it, and they got fights on there. But they only got, like, it's Ring TV, but they only got, like, maybe 20 or 30 fights on there. But it is kind of cool, man, that you go back, because you know somebody's going to start this, you know?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you get all these, but somebody's got to buy the rights to it. Somebody's got to, you know what I mean? So that.
I mean, and we brought this up several shows ago. We need a boxing network or somebody that's going to invest in all these European fights. Instead of us talking about the upcoming fights that we can't see, well, somebody needs to start showing these fights from the UK and Germany and wherever else they have them. I mean, boxing deserves to have that kind of outlet.
Yeah, and they got Box Nation in Britain, and that's a 24-hour boxing channel.
Yeah, that's
it's
what
a
they do.
Subscription-based, and that I would pay for that.
Absolutely.
You know, as I just get the look, you know.
So why can't we have something like that here in the U.S.?
I agree 100%, man. I agree 100%. I wish they could. That's for sure.
Hey, Alex, you want to do us a favor? Create that.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Alright, so let's move on to the news and rumors section here.
Okay.
Let's talk about the attendance, man. The attendance for the Bronner-Alekhverdiev fight was 5,932.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier.
The arena holds 17,000-plus seats.
That means there were almost 12,000 seats empty, people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I talked to a friend of mine who's in the military, and he got his 4 tickets for free. So they gave out, and I said, how many were, because he goes to a site and they give, you know, military people tickets for free. There was over, I think, there was at least 500 from that site. I also read on the internet, and I was talking to some people there that actually got tickets for the fight, and they said there was like 250 free. You know, they said they had 250 free tickets, so they took 3 or 4 or whatever it was.
Right.
So my guess is that they were probably anywhere from the 500, at least 500 to 1,000 ticket range that they actually gave out. That they actually gave away and comped. You know, and so that makes the attendance 4,932 that actually purchased, you know.
I blame this on Adrian Broner. He was supposed to promote this, and he didn't do a goddamn thing about it.
You know, when I was at the press conference, and, of course, he makes everybody wait for 30 minutes before he shows up. And he shows up. And he's over there dancing, acting a fool, and everything like that. He goes to the podium, says absolutely nothing, and just says that, you know, I haven't talked to anybody. I'm gonna, I'm not gonna talk to anybody there, you know, blah blah blah. And then, so he's got to walk past me to get to the podium, and he's got to walk past me to get out. So he's walking back, you know, the press conference ends, he's walking out, strutting around, dancing and stuff like that, and he says, no interview. Somebody tried to ask him a question, he goes, no interviews. The only people I'll give interviews to is Showtime, you know. And he walked past me, and I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, so you won't even give an interview to a local website? I said, we're Cincinnati-based. I said, you're a hometown guy, right? And he was like, only Showtime. I was like, you know, you're a cold fish, you know. I said, I don't understand that, you know.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me and kept walking. And one of the promoters or whatever, not promoters, but one of the publicity people that I know were there kind of gave me a big smile, you know. And I think that, you know, like I said, man, I think that, you know, it's really interesting that he talks to Showtime. And did you hear him in the Showtime interview where he said, you know, well, you know, I do interviews with, you know, I always do interviews, and I didn't focus enough on the fights. I've got a big heart, so I want to make everybody feel good. He never did one interview here in Cincinnati, never.
Nope.
Not one. And not even leading up to the fight. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about ever. All right, he doesn't give interviews to the local people. You know what he does? He goes up to Shade 105 in New York, which Floyd Mayweather is a regular on up there. And he goes up there and gives interviews. He'll give interviews to, like, you know, Showtime or something like that, or maybe Las Vegas Press. He never gives anybody an interview from Cincinnati, ever.
And see, one of the keys to making the PBC successful, and I don't mean to focus only on PBC, because I guess this would work for any promotion. But if any promoter is going, or advisor, whatever you want to call Al Haymon, if they're going to give you a hometown fight, most of the time, it's up to the hometown fighter to sell the product. Look at Deontay Wilder. They've been to Alabama twice. And in both cases, Alabama sold out. Because Wilder made it possible for people to get out there. I mean, he did his job. I mean, when they go to the Barclays, they leave it up to the New York guys to sell the fights because they do. What the hell's wrong with Ohio, a.k.a. Adrian Broner, for not wanting to support his own hometown?
I agree. I don't get it, man. I really don't get it. He, like I said, coming into Cincinnati, he had, you know, not only an obligation for his promotion, you know, but what about he started this promotion company called AB or whatever, AB Promotions.
Yeah, and something like that.
What about all the guys on the undercard? You just screwed them also, you know? You didn't really do any favors for them.
And I can't blame any of the other Ohio guys because they're not well enough known. They can't go out there and talk about the card.
Nobody's trying to interview Jamel Herring or Robert Easter locally on TV. You know what I mean? They want to hear from Adrian Broner. And then it's up to Adrian to give these names out to them, start name dropping and stuff. Guys like you and me, that's different. You know?
Yeah.
But you're talking about a local event trying to get people in the building. I mean, that's what the television's for, you know, and that's what he's for. He's the promoter. Even it was funny, man. Electra DF's promoter got up, and he you know, kind of gave it to Broner, and he said, "Look, you're the big star, you're the hometown guy. How come this fight didn't sell out? You're such a big star, you're a big celebrity. How come the fight didn't sell out? You know,
yeah,
couldn't agree with him more.
I mean, like Floyd Mayweather or not, because Floyd knows how to sell a fight."
Well, it takes work. Everybody, and the thing is, I mean, everybody craps on Floyd, but Floyd is the hardest working guy in boxing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he really is. I mean, he's out there promoting 24/7. You always hear his name. You always, even though he's retired, he's still posting shots and everything like that. You're still hearing about him.
Because as Floyd said on TV when he was on Fox on Tuesday, he said, "My job now is to sell my promotion company and support my fighters."
Right. Right, you know, and Broner, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, you had a real opportunity to not only hype this fight and get some people in there, but also give your fighters on the undercard some exposure, and you didn't do that.
You know? I mean, look, I know you love fights in Cincinnati, but I wouldn't blame the PBC if they never brought another card back there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and incidentally, there was absolutely no local coverage for this fight, none. I went down for the press conference. This is funny. I went down there for the press conference. And there was no parking. I mean, it was U.S. Bank was you couldn't park there. You couldn't park in at the stadium. I had to park all the way down by the football stadium, almost by the expressway, and walk to U.S. Bank, which is about a mile and a half. Yeah, about a mile and a half, somewhere around there. Nothing major. But you know, I'm used to parking at the stadium and just walking in. And I'm, you know, I walk and I see our local Channel 9 truck there, you know, the local ABC station or whatever that was there. And I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be amazing. Turns out nobody was at the press conference. I think we had like four media guys at the press conference. There was like literally four people. Adrian Broner's entourage was bigger than the media turnout there. I mean, I really believe there was four people there that I saw from the media. That's it. No local media at all. They were all there to cover the Reds' last game. Which didn't hit me until, of course, you know, because I'm a one track guy. I think boxing. I'm not really a big baseball guy, you know. I'm thinking boxing. Everybody's here to see this, you know, and nobody showed up for that, you know. It was kind of an afterthought, you know. Nobody even thought about it, you know. Not one local station was there to cover the fight. One guy on our ABC local news said that, and this was his quote: "A fighter from Cincinnati is fighting this weekend, and he's refused to talk to media." That was it. That was it, you know. And our first commercial, Lisa heard it. She listens to the sports talk radio all the time. She heard it was on 700, and she heard that it was like a Ticketmaster thing saying Broner is going to fight such and such, you know. And it was the day before the fight. It was that Friday. That was the first time she had heard anything on the fight. And she listens to that sports talk constantly, you know.
Yeah. Well, WLW is one of the biggest stations in the country. I mean, even people from anywhere else in the country know who they are. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and so like I said, man, I mean, there was no media there. I mean, this really should have been a sellout by all rights. I mean, this really should have been a sellout, and he had a real opportunity, man, for himself and the other fighters on this card that were promoted by his company. Yeah. You know, and just
no. Like I said, I wouldn't blame PBC if they never gave Adrian Broner or any other Ohio guy until they get big enough another fight there in their hometown, because Deontay Wilder and others, when they're given a hometown fight, they do what they're supposed to do.
Right. You know, and again, I was joking around a few shows ago about. I was talking to the guy from the PBC, and I said, you know, how is it that Cleveland gets Sean Porter and we end up with Adrian Broner, you know? And ironically enough, Sean Porter, before the fight, I know you've seen this, was on Showtime, tweeted out to Adrian Broner, you know, we battled, you know, we fought a couple of months ago, but in the end, we're both from Ohio, and I root for you, and good luck tomorrow, and God bless you. That's a class act. I mean, that is just a class guy, man.
Look, Sean and Ken are class dudes. I mean,
I'm just so impressed with that guy, man.
Yeah. So, let's move on to other topics, because Adrian kind of just runs everything.
He does, doesn't he? He does.
Yeah.
Brooke versus Chavez. Showtime Sports has confirmed that it will pick up the IBF welterweight world championship fight between undefeated Kell Brook and contender Diego Chavez on October 24th. From Motorpoint Arena in Sheffield. The bout's going to be on at 5:45 Eastern, 2:45 Pacific. So
and they'll replay it. They'll also replay it at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
Yeah, yeah. So it should be a decent fight. I give, I definitely give Brooke. Brooke should win this fight pretty handily.
Yeah, and look, I like Kell Brook. He's a wonderful fighter, but it's time for him to talk about hometown cooking. This is three consecutive fights he's had in that arena. He needs to come across the pond and start fighting over here and quit demanding that everybody goes over there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Or at least step up the competition here. You know, you've had, was it JoJo Dan?
Frankie Gavin, and then now this.
This guy. And, I mean, he hasn't been exactly walking through killers here, you know.
No.
I mean, so, yeah, he needs to stay in that fight.
And it was supposed to be Brandon Rios. So, just think about that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Klitschko and Fury. Vladimir Klitschko, world heavyweight title bout with Britain's Tyson Fury, has been arranged for November 28th, rescheduled November 28th in Dusseldorf.
Yep.
Germany. So it's good to see that one's back on.
And Klitschko, in the announcement of rescheduling this, he said, look, 55,000 people bought tickets. Their tickets are still good. They're going to be able to use them. I'm not going to allow people to not see this.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have 55,000 people wanting to see you, you're gonna do everything you can to reschedule it.
That's what I said, man. When you sell 55,000 tickets, that fight's going to happen. You know, even delayed or not delayed, that fight's happening. No questions.
Yeah.
You know, friend of the show Francisco Santana just signed a big deal with Top Rank. He was previously with Gary Shaw, and so I'm really happy for him, man. And I see a lot of big fights in his future. He's a very good fighter, very talented fighter. And they got a lot of big names at Top Rank, so hopefully he gets in on some of that money, man.
Yep.
Showtime, as you see, if you watch the Showtime telecast, they actually released their boxing schedule for the year. October 23rd, they're going to have Rob Brandt versus Louis Rose on Showbox. And, of course, October 24th, the Kell Brook-Chavez fight.
Mm-hmm.
Antoine Douglas on November 6th versus Les Sherrington. That's a Showbox.
That's right.
November 14th, G-Man, Gary Russell versus Oscar Escandon, as
yep.
we reported a couple weeks ago. All right. I can, you know, I'll watch it for sure, you know, but I think it's going to be an easy fight for him. I think it's a cupcake.
He was at Cincinnati also. And he gave several interviews, and he said after he takes care of this, he wants Leo Santa Cruz.
Oh, man, that's going to be awesome. That's going to be awesome. I'd like to see him fight Lomachenko, but, you know, I think he could do a lot better job than he did that first fight, man. There was something wrong with him that first fight. I'm going
to
give him that.
I think what he wants to do is collect other people's belts and then go to the negotiating table with Lomachenko and say, okay, now.
Good move.
Yeah.
Good move. And then November 28th, James DeGale versus Lucien Bute.
Yeah, and like I said, if DeGale wins this, He fights the Hawk next because I'm guaranteeing a victory tomorrow night for the Hawk. So there you go.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Bobby doing the Joe Namath, boy, guaranteeing a victory.
Love it.
Confidence.
Yeah.
All right, December 5th, Daniel Jacobs versus Peter Quillen will be on Showtime. I'm surprised. I'm really surprised this wasn't on NBC.
Well, as I mentioned a few shows ago, I don't understand why you would talk about it so much on NBC. You'd interview both fighters on NBC, and now you put this on Showtime? Well, I mean, what's the point of that?
Yeah, because they're both like, I mean, they both, you know, you kind of both identify them with as NBC fighters now, you know, as TV fighters, you know, and I mean...
I don't understand this move, Al.
Yeah.
You or your spokesman need to explain this. Okay.
Yeah, it was odd, man. It was a little odd.
Yeah.
All right. So not last but not least, Arthur Abraham.
Yeah.
WBO middleweight champion Arthur Abraham and his promoters at Sourland will be announcing his next
opponent. It's super middleweight. It's 168.
Super middleweight. I thought I said that. I'm sorry.
No, you said middleweight.
Sorry about that. They'll be announcing his next opponent October 7th for his November 21st fight. And the rumor for the November 21st fight is going to be Martin Murray. So Arthur Abraham versus Martin Murray on November 21st is the rumored fight.
Because Martin has moved up to 168. After the Triple G beating, he decided to move up.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you go.
And also, too, going back to the Showtime schedule, on December 11th, they're going to have a fight. It just hasn't been announced yet. It's going to be a Showtime fight. So a lot of good stuff coming up on Showtime. Now, last but not least, our train wreck of the week.
And from now on, this will be called the Adrian Broner train wreck of the week.
Adrian Broner train wreck of the week. Whether he's in it or not, he does enough stupid things to have this named after him.
There you go. Be proud, Cincinnati.
That's right. I'm proud. All right.
Yeah.
After winning the WBA Junior Welterweight Championship in Cincinnati on Saturday night, Adrian Broner made kind of a strange move. So instead of calling out some heavy hitters in the division, Crawford, you have, you know, Crawford's out there, Victor Postol, Lucas Matisse, he called out, get ready, Ashley Theophane.
Yeah.
Who? Ashley Theophane.
And
you know,
he did this, right?
He's ranked number 47. 47! 47, according to BoxRec.
And he did this on TV, folks.
Yeah, right. And just like it was like, oh, yeah, let's fight this guy.
Yeah.
We were in press row, and again, the audio was horrible there, so we couldn't hear anything. Somebody heard him say Mayweather and said he just called out Mayweather, and I'm thinking, wow, he really just called out Mayweather? Seriously?
No.
You know, not exactly. Let's slow down here. You know, pump the brakes here. Apparently, all this started when Floyd Mayweather, who promotes lightly regarded Ashley Theophane, stated that he thought his fighter could beat Broner. Broner apparently took the ball and ran with it. As a quote from Broner after the fight, put Ashley on one of your private jets, bring him to see me, and I bet I bring the girl out of that boy like Bruce Jenner. Broner said immediately out of Alec, you know, after the fight with Alec Verdiev.
Yeah.
You know, another, you know, great statement, you know. Way to get yourself noticed. Theophane apparently is ready for the title shot himself. He's been quoted as saying, whenever Adrian is ready to make the fight, we can make it happen. My promoter Floyd Mayweather and advisor Duan Blake believe I can beat him, and so do I. He's a great fighter. His record shows that. 26 years old and four weight world champion. But I believe my ability, and I 100% believe that I would be victorious. I want to be your first defense, Adrian. You call me out live after your win. Let's do this.
I've seen Ashley fight. Frank, I'm not impressed.
Right.
Okay.
He's 30. What is he? 35 years old. He's 36. 36 wins or 35 wins with 6 losses.
Yeah.
What are you going to prove by making your first defense against this guy?
Like I said, quit giving this guy cupcakes, marshmallows, whatever analogy you want to prove. He's got a strap around his waist. Make him earn the damn thing.
You know, and I was shocked. I mean, like I said, I didn't know who he was talking about, and Yeah, like I said, I didn't know who he was talking about, and then at the arena, and then when I got home, he said Ashley. I'm like, Ashley, what in the world?
Yeah, and I had to go look it up.
I'm like, looking on the box, I said, no. And then I looked at the TMT promotions or whatever. I said, come on. Then I box wrecked the guy. I'm like, are you serious?
No.
Why did you just call me out after the fight? You know, I mean, it would have been just as impressive. You know, I mean, seriously, really?
Eric, I tell you. Maybe I'm just a boxing junkie, but I was one of the few people didn't have to say who. I knew immediately who it was. I'm thinking, oh my God, you've got to be kidding!
I was like, what? Ashley, Thea, man, come on, man! Nobody in the arena knew who he was talking about. Nobody, guaranteed. Nobody in the arena knew who he was talking about. And he was like, well, he's promoted by Floyd Mayweather. Floyd thinks he can beat me. You know, he thinks that his guy can beat me, and let's get it going, and blah, blah, blah. Are you serious, my man? After winning the strap, after your fourth world title, you know, this is who you call out. Come on, man.
Well, you know, with the way he was talking to Paulie during the fight, I was thinking to myself, what are you trying to do, promote a rematch?
Yeah, boy. Yeah.
Because, in my opinion, I thought Paulie either won that fight or got a draw.
No, I thought Bronner got him, man. I thought Bronner landed the more significant blows in that fight.
I know, but on TV, the way it looked, it didn't look like Adrian was...
It was close, man. I'll give you that, man. It was close. Yeah. It was close fight. It was closer than I thought it should have been, for sure. But I did think Bronner had won that fight, man. But it was definitely close, man. It wasn't
I'm thinking to myself, because that's the first thing that popped into my head when he started doing that. What the hell are you trying to do? Get a rematch?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the first fight was questionable enough.
Right.
Do you really think you're going to make a difference? I mean, Paulie's not going to take it, because Paulie's not going to go down and wait. But I'm thinking to myself, do you really think it's going to look any better the second time around? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it completely, you know, and he just completely disrespected Sean Porter after the fight by saying, you know, why shouldn't they lost to him? He's kind of a, you know, he's not, basically saying he's not in my league. Yeah. You know, well, clearly he was in your league because he pounded for 12 rounds.
Number one, Sean Porter is going to accomplish more in his boxing career than Adrian Broner ever will. How he got four title belts in four different weight classes, that just
speaks to... Well, look who the guys he beat. You know what I mean? World beaters. I mean...
That just speaks to the level of the divisions that he was fighting in.
Yeah. And let's face it, the guy ranked number 47.
And let's face it, 140 is starting to get good, but there's been a long time that 140 has been pretty weak.
And some of the guys at work, one of the guys at work asked me, he says, he said, why don't you think he'll fight Crawford? Why don't you think he'll fight? You know why he won't fight Crawford, you know? It's a bludgeoning, you know?
First of all, I think the Terrence Crawford-Victor Postol fight will happen before Terrence Crawford or Victor Postol ever get in the ring with Broner.
Right. Oh,
because
yeah.
I think that's a 50-50 fight, Postol and Crawford, because Crawford is the only one tall enough to fight Victor and give him a competitive fight. Most of those guys in that division, Victor's going to be able to use his size against.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. And Crawford, man, he's so good. Crawford's going to move up and wait, you know, before too long, I think, until 147. He's just a good fighter, man.
He's
solid.
Yeah.
He's solid all the way around, you know.
Derry Jean, how are you pronounce his name, the next opponent for Crawford, who also fights on the 24th. He's going to look like a sparring session kind of guy, and Derry John is—he's not a cheapskate. He was competitive with Lamont Peterson, and but Crawford's going to make him look like he doesn't even belong in that ring.
Yeah, Crawford's a different animal, man. Crawford's a different guy, and I don't see Bronner fighting him anytime soon.
No,
no way.
Let
me tell you what: as sharp as Bronner looked, man, and he looks sharp, man. I got to give it to him, man. I'm not. Like I said, man, I got to give it to him. He is, he looked incredible on Saturday. He looked really, really dangerous. That being said, the guy he was in there against was not Sean Porter. Marcus Maidana was not.
And let's be honest. It sounds like to me Adrian is never going to step up to the plate and fight anybody significant unless he's forced to. And that's That's a sad commentary for a guy that now has a world title belt around his waist.
Well, that's kind of what he said after the fight, too. He said that, you know, he said that after the fight, he had said that, you know, before, he said, you know, he said, because I'm from the hood, I used to take any fight. And, you know, I just consider it a challenge. Any fight, anybody wants some can come get some. He said, but now, you know, there's not going to be no more of that. You know, he's really going to pick and choose fighters and everything like that, which, you know, Ashley Theophane, you know.
Yeah, look, he's not entitled to the Floyd Mayweather treatment.
Yeah, and Theophane, to his credit, is on a 6-fight winning streak, you know, but he's nowhere ranked in the WBA rankings. He's not even in the top 15. And according to BoxRec, he's 47.
When you're number 47 in the world, you've got to win some significant fights. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, you know, and he's been on the short end 6 times, you know. So.
And I'm sorry for all the UK listeners, and I know he's one of your guys, but give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he'll be very competitive against Bronner, but maybe that's what he's looking for. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, Adrian just disgusts me because he thinks he's earned the privilege of being a Floyd Mayweather and picking and choosing his opponents.
Right.
The number one guy in the world, whoever that might turn out to be, is probably the only one that ever earns that privilege. And honestly, I hope that kind of treatment goes away. I hope the number one guy, whoever it turns out to be, will never pick and choose. Will just fight whoever he's supposed to fight, and we never have to worry about these kind of discussions because guys like Adrian truly make me sick when they pull this crap.
Well, I mean, you look at guys like Klitschko, who everybody, you know, knocks and everything like that. And I got to be honest, man, I'm not Klitschko's biggest fan. I don't really care for the way he fights. I think he fights a very boring style, and I can't wait till he's another one. I can't wait till he either gets knocked out or leaves. But you have to give it to him that he fights everybody put in front of him. He goes through each belt, each organization, takes their number one guy, and annihilates him.
And look, I'm not a Klitschko supporter either as far as the way he fights. I think it's boring. But until you're able to beat him or until he decides he's had enough, you're going to have to deal with it.
Right.
And he never turns down a fight. I mean, my God, I hate to say this, but if Shannon Briggs keeps winning, he's going to get a fight. You know, it's like, give me a break. And how many people realistically would take on a guy like Tyson Fury if they don't have to?
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason why Tyson Fury is getting this title shot is he's earned it.
He's a mandatory.
Because he's a mandatory.
And, you know, you're a mandatory, you've earned the spot.
You know,
I mean, I don't care who you are. Nobody thought like that Pulev was a mandatory. You know, Pulev was a mandatory a few fights ago.
And
nobody thought he should have been there. But he's a mandatory. It is what it is, man. I mean, he's a mandatory guy.
And like Klitschko said after he beat Jennings, he said, I'm not going to duck Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder is going to get his shot. But he said, I have 3 belts. I think it's 3 belts. He said, I've got 3 mandatories. I've got to take care of those before Deontay Wilder gets his shot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think and it is. I think he does have 3 of the belts, 3 of the 4 belts. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know. I mean, and how many fighters are going to say, look, I'm never going to duck a fight, but let me take care of my business?
Right. I mean, that's what he does. I mean, and you got to respect that. And that's why I wish, as much as maybe you hate his fighting style or whatever, look, you wish all champions were like him.
That's right.
Oh, you really do.
You know?
He takes whoever's out there, you know. Either that or take the big fights, you know. I mean,
I think Wilder and Klitschko will be very competitive. And maybe Wilder will be the only one that might even have a shot at beating him. But, you know, we're going to have to wait until Klitschko takes care of his business, and Wilder's got business to take care of.
He's got a big guy in front of Povetkin. I mean, pending Povetkin gets past his next guy in November or whatever. You know. Yeah.
If I'm representing Alexander Povetkin, why would you possibly risk your mandatory title shot by taking a fight? I mean,
you're a moron.
That could almost be train wreck of the week number 2 here.
Yeah.
Because you're already a mandatory titleist. You're the next guy in line, but yet you want to take another fight?
Yeah. Horrible management. I mean, I'm sure Povetkin's down with it, but I mean, that's horrible management.
I mean, isn't the championship belt more important? isn't your heavyweight title shot more important than taking a money fight in Russia? Right. And look, the guy he's fighting is that 7 foot tall idiot, Bach or whatever his name is.
I know who you're talking about.
And Klitschko already destroyed him. So what is the purpose of taking, I mean, what if this so-called 7 foot person walks in there and knocks you out? Guess what? He gets your title shot.
Exactly. That's the thing, man. That's what, then I don't know if this guy becomes number one contender, but I know we got a new number one contender, and Deontay can go on fighting whoever he wants to fight, you know.
Right.
It's silly. It's silly.
After doing this for almost 4 years, I've learned how the boxing business works, and this is one of the most stupidest moves that a fighter could make. You're already the mandatory titleist. You could be getting your title shot in November or December, but no, you're going to take a fight in Russia to fight somebody who has no business being in the ring with you.
And who's over 200 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, and anybody over 200, man, can put you away, man. They can put you to sleep. So
I mean, I've never heard of a mandatory titleist ever possibly risking his title shot because he decides he wants to have another fight.
Right.
I mean, normally you have champions who want to avoid their mandatories, but you never see the mandatory challenger avoiding his title shot. I mean, that does not make a whole lot of sense to me.
With Morrison? You remember Tommy Morrison? Didn't that happen with him where he was guaranteed a title shot with Lennox Lewis, and then he lost to Michael Bent or something like that? I think it was like
a third round
KO or something.
And then after that, that's when the whole AIDS thing came out.
Yeah, it was very shortly after that because I remember he fought. Didn't he fight Lennox Lewis?
No, I don't remember. I don't think so.
I thought he did for some. I think he might have, but okay. It was the whole AIDS thing came out after that.
And people wonder why boxing is not a mainstream sport. Well, when you see decisions like Alexander Povetkin's making, or decisions like Cincinnati's own is making, it makes you wonder. You don't have to wonder why you're not a mainstream sport.
Yeah, I've never seen a big event like this in Cincy get so little coverage. Even when the UFC comes to town, it's a big deal. I see it all over the TV. I hear it on the radio. People are talking about it. UFC makes their fighters available. You know, sometimes you'll hear them on the radio. So they're promoting the fight, you know. And Dana White is obviously one of the most successful people there is. I mean, he will go out there. He will take pictures with the fans and everything like that. As you see, everybody sees my Facebook. I got a picture with him, with Dana White. He's such a super nice guy. And they're all of those fighters are all willing to talk to press, you know. And then you got this idiot who fights in his hometown and doesn't talk to anybody. I don't understand. I don't get it.
So Adrian Broner and Alexander Povetkin get to share the train wreck of the week.
Right. There you go. There you go.
And doesn't that wrap everything up?
That wraps it up, man. That'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robbie on Twitter at RingsideRobert. And I'm at Ringside73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.